This is Ozarks at Large for Monday, April 4th, 2011. I'm Kyle Kellums. Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, the Fayetteville Underground Art Gallery prepares not just for this week's first Thursday reception, but for a third year of existence. Two of the members of the gallery's board of directors talk about what's next for the artist cooperative. And a bit of an audio surprise at this weekend's farmers market season opener. First, Congress recently eliminated funding for a national sustainable agriculture program that's based in Fayetteville. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich has this report.
Today, Democrats and Republicans in Congress continue to work on a compromise means to cut over $30 billion in spending from the federal budget to avoid a partial shutdown of the government on Friday. For example, conservative lawmakers seek to increase the Pentagon budget and gut certain EPA projects. One enduring federal farm program with roots in Fayetteville and the Reagan administration is the National Center Agriculture Information Service, also called ATRA. It saw its $2.8 million allocation for the current year erased. ATRA, with six regional offices, began under the nonprofit National Center for Appropriate Technology. NCAT is based in Butte, Montana, was founded in 1976, and is funded by foundations and government grants. Teresa Maurer's been working for the national nonprofit organization NCAT for 20 years, the last 15 of those as ATRA Project Director in the Mid-South Fayetteville, Arkansas office. It's located in the old Walker Stone House west of the town square.
Just thinking about Arkansas, we responded to 53,000 requests. So that's just one state. And then because our service is national and we have a website, another statistic that I like to use is that people visited our website, but they didn't just visit. They downloaded 6 million publications that are written by our specialists. And in addition, we were personally in touch through workshops and conferences with 177,000 people around the country from almost every state. So those are people that we actually saw and interacted with at conferences.
ATRA distillates best management practices on things like organic crop and vegetable production, agricultural energy, soils and compost, livestock, pest management, biodiesel, even marketing. Since it was first appropriated with $500,000 in 1987, ATRA's annual budget now stands at $2.8 million with a staff of 50. It's funded year to year. The program faced elimination in the early 90s, again in 2003, and also in 2007.
And the funding comes to NCAT from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, specifically the Rural Development Agency, and within that, the Rural Business Cooperative Services. So we have been funded each year since 1987, so this is a long-standing program. And the most recent problem that we're all concerned about and that's affecting 12 jobs right here in Fayetteville, Arkansas, as I'm speaking to you today, the problem is that there is a continuing resolution that is keeping the government going essentially until next Friday. In five of the six continuing resolutions, the program was okay. In other words, funding for the ATRA program was fine. It was the latest one that was passed in mid-March that specifically, and I mean specifically, cut this program. And the parts of the problem, this is the fiscal year 2011, so this is not funding that's far off. This is what is allowing the program to operate now. And, you know, they're talking about trying to get funding freed up to allow operations from now through the end of September.
This year, ATRA was cut, Maurer says, because it was mistakenly designated as an earmark, a legislative provision that directs money to specific projects. Earmarks historically have implied legislators' districts' pet projects, as compared to appropriations to particular government agencies. ATRA project funding is an appropriation and not an earmark.
This is a program that was authorized in the current Farm Bill, which is in effect until next year. It was also in the president's budget, and it's been in presidential budgets over decades, both parties. It's national in scope. And the problem is that the definition of an earmark keeps changing. It's just a huge political football. But our position is that the ATRA program, it is a program. It's not an organization.
The Arkansas Congressional Delegation, Maurer says, understands the value of the ATRA project. Former Senator Blanche Lincoln was a champion.
So what's going on right now is that Senators Bozeman and Pryor and other senators around the U.S. are really trying to help keep the program funded. And negotiations are going on right now. So it's not something that people can sort of wait and see what happens. It's things that are happening right now, conversations that are happening right now. So our friends in the grassroots community and farmers, educators, extension people, other people around the country are expressing their support by calling their senators. So I just wanted to make it clear that Senators Bozeman and Pryor are helping out along with other people. We've tried to initiate a similar effort with Congressman Womack, so he has also been contacted on the House side. So that's sort of where we stand right now, and it is, as I said, affecting 12 people today right here in Fayetteville, Arkansas.
Literally, staff paychecks have stopped. Advocates for ATRA say the timing could not be worse. Given a surge of interest in organic and sustainable agriculture, even Walmart, the world's largest retailer, has pledged to ensure a long-term supply of reliable agricultural products produced in a sustainable way. Late last year, the company announced plans to double the sale of locally sourced fresh produce by 2015, and ATRA provides all the necessary resources for farmers for free.
Yes, this is this program is really unique. There's not anything else like it. I mean, we answer the phone 12 hours a day. We have a very popular website, and I mentioned the workshops and publications, and there's incredible interest. There's interest from farmers who are making decisions and changing their practices, changing their marketing. There's incredible interest from consumers in local, sustainable, and organic products that's kind of driving the farmer interest in this. And the Department of Agriculture itself has initiated a much more visible, presence in terms of local food and sustainable agriculture. And this is one of several programs within USDA that contributes to the effort. It's the only information service, though. We make it easy for people to find us, easy for farmers to contact us. If 12 hours a day on the phone isn't enough, they can email us, and they do email us. So it's a very, I think, very popular and timely program, and demand has increased every year of our almost 25 years of existence.
Maurer encourages anyone who's used the program to contact their congressman and request funding be reinstated. Reporting for Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
For more information about the ATRA project, you can go online to atra.ncat.org. That's ATRA with two T's, atra.ncat.org. That link can also be found on ozarksatlarge.com. Speaking of farmers, many of them were on hand Saturday morning for the opening of the Fayetteville Farmers Market 2011 season on the Fayetteville Square. Also on hand, a flash mob. About 20 singers gathered together performing a rendition of the 19th century traditional spiritual Down by the River to Pray, rewritten as Down by the Market for Seeds. Sounds from Saturday's opening of the Fayetteville Farmers Market for 2011.
Economies and who shall own our soil and sea.
Former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani was in Fayetteville last night, speaking as a guest of the University of Arkansas's Distinguished Lecture Series. Before his address in Barnhill Arena, he met with reporters for about 11 minutes to take questions. During that press conference, he discussed the qualities of a successful mayor, his plans for 2012, and close to 10 years later, his thoughts about the attacks on New York City on September 11th, 2001.
I guess the primary message that I have about September 11 is that we shouldn't forget it. We shouldn't relegate it to history yet, because it isn't part of our history. It's part of our present. The same people, or I should say, people for the same reason as the people that attacked us before, are still there, still trying to attack us. They've done it more times than we realize since September 11, if not in the United States, in other parts of the world. So some of the horrific events that have happened in the history of this country, we can now make part of our history, like Pearl Harbor. But we can't make September 11 a part of our history because the cause for which those people killed us is still very much alive.
Giuliani served as mayor of New York City for 8 years. Before that, he was a prosecutor of some renown, earning national attention for his battles against organized crime. He's also been a candidate for U.S. Senate, and somewhat briefly in the last election cycle, a candidate for the Republican presidential nomination. When asked last night if he might throw his hat into the ring for the 2012 GOP nomination, he joked he wasn't wearing a hat, then speculated a bit.
I don't know. My concern about 2012 is to make sure, because I'm a Republican, to make sure that the Republican Party feels a candidate that can win. And if I think that I can help by being a candidate, then that would probably persuade me to do it. But I think I can help supporting another candidate, then I'll probably do that. And there's time to figure that out. The good thing about this election, as opposed to 4 years ago, is it's happening very slowly. So it gives you a chance to think about it. It gives you a chance to get it down to a smaller period of time so people can focus more on the issues. I thought the 2008 election, by the time we actually got to the election, everybody was worn out. You had a major battle in the Democratic Party between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. You had, you know, eight Republicans running and for a year or whatever it was. And they were running for about a year before the election actually got started. By the time we got to it, people were exhausted. I went to both the Democratic and National and Republican convention. I didn't go as a delegate to the Democratic convention. I went to comment, you know, on television. And I thought both conventions looked very tired. People look exhausted. They looked exhausted. They looked like they would rather go to a baseball game because they'd been exposed to politics for a whole year. And this time I think we're doing it better. The election sounds like it'll start next year rather than this year. And with everything going on in the world, probably better. It gives the president a chance to be president for a while longer without all the interruptions of a partisan campaign. There's plenty of time to have this campaign next year. A lot of very serious things going on right now that should get worked out in the best interest of the country, not in the Republicans' best interest or in President Obama's best interest. Got to figure out Libya. Who knows what's going to happen in the rest of the Middle East? We've got an economy and a budget that affects the economy, where it would be really good if we could reach some kind of an agreement on how to handle it. You have a presidential campaign going on. It's hard enough to do it. You have a presidential campaign going on at the same time. It's impossible to do any of those things.
Former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani speaking during a brief news conference last night in Fayetteville. He spoke at Barnhill Arena on the University of Arkansas campus as part of the university's Distinguished Lecture Series. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. You know the lyrics. To the shores of Tripoli goes the opening line of the Marine Corps hymn. It's a spot on the world's globe that has received plenty of attention over the past few weeks, and we're calling in our history doctor, Bill Smith, to help us understand Tripoli in history. And now, Bill, welcome back.
Glad to be back.
What's the reference to the shores of Tripoli?
Well, it recalls the first ever foreign war for the United States, taking on the forces of the Ottoman Empire, loosely associated, in the First Barbary War from 1801 to 1805. Specifically, it's the Battle of Deim. This was the first time that the new United States of America saw its military forces lift the nation's colors in victory over foreign soil.
Really just about 30 years old.
Exactly.
This country. Barbary Coast. I've always heard of the Barbary Pirates.
Yes, of the same name.
Okay.
President Thomas Jefferson was dealing with raiders from the independent small sultanates of the north coast of Africa. Not terribly different from how our current president, Barack Obama, today has had to deal with similar pirates sailing out, looking for captives and tribute from the Horn of Africa into the Indian Ocean.
So who were the Barbary Pirates?
Well, the Barbary states included Algiers, Tunis, the Kingdom of Morocco, and, of course, Tripoli. This is the geographic forerunner of today's Libya. Jefferson had history with the Tripolitan rulers. He had chafed under original agreements of payment for safe passage that began roughly at the start of the nation. So you reference this being 30 years old. We've had this problem for some time. At that time, Jefferson had recommended the government not pay the tribute when he was just a negotiator. His fellow envoy and future American president, John Adams, agreed, but did not think it was practical for the fledgling nation to risk a war just after gaining its independence.
You stress that Jefferson suggested the United States not pay when he was a negotiator. This is before he becomes president. Jefferson.
Yes, well before he becomes President Jefferson. The war results from his decision as the president to send the fledgling United States Navy into the Mediterranean to protect American ships from the pirates. The Pasha of Tripoli had dramatically increased the tribute, and when Jefferson balked, war was declared by the Tripolitans on the United States.
Wow.
So, you know, this is a precedent-setting event, as Jefferson is the first to send American ships on patrol and does not notify Congress until they're too far out to sea to be recalled. So, you know, in one of these great, we're so upset at the president for doing things, that's just tradition. It's interesting to look back on this episode as we're trying to define it for the shores of Tripoli and find some small little details like that one in which opposition to the current president would be saying, well, War Powers Act. No, we're talking about the turn of the 1800s, not the turn of the 21st century in which we're having these issues.
So the president, President Jefferson, goes to Congress after the Navy has sailed away some and tells them, oh, I'm sending them on? They've left?
Well, what looks like a unilateral act in a 20 or 21st century president, you know, is really more just the way things worked at the time. He's not trying to be that clever. But he did also calculate, some say, to get them out to sea far enough that they couldn't be signaled back. So that probably wasn't as far as today. You know, you can always find somebody in the world, but you didn't have to get too far offshore
right.
Back in the day.
Did Congress ever act?
Well, you know, after he informs Congress, he is then going to back up a little bit and say, look, I need you, Congress, to authorize this because as the president of the United States under the Constitution, by the way, you know, I had a little to do with the writing of it.
Presidents haven't been able to say for a while.
That's right.
I was there when it was written.
He felt he was unauthorized to have the Navy do more than just defend itself. Without a declaration from the legislative body. So, you know, on the one hand, yes, he sends the Navy out without authorization, but two, he's not going to let them get into offensive operations until the Congress acts. Well, as you might suspect, no declaration of war was voted upon, but Congress did give Jefferson authorization to take action. Again, this not sound familiar.
Right.
We're not going to declare war in fill-in-the-blank country, but we will allow the president to have the ability to react to the Gulf of Tonkin or the Iraqis. You know,
right.
Fill-in-the-blank with your president of choice. So shortly thereafter, the USS Enterprise will end up battling with ships from the Tripolitan Navy, and off we go.
Well, I started this with the lyric, the shores of Tripoli. So what happened on the shores?
Well, the United States Navy was unchallenged, but the threat was not halted until U.S. troops were put ashore.
Ground troops,
something that the current day pundits and politicians are concerned will be a result of the use of our air power. You know, when you think about it, the 21st century equivalent of sending in the naval guns.
Mm-hmm.
Before finally committing to ground operations, though, we had to try sending in some things like a fire ship. I found this one interesting in looking up the Battle of Deme, which is where we're eventually headed. The USS Intrepid was a rechristened, captured Tripolitan ship. It had been loaded with explosives and pitch and tar and set afire by a skeleton crew and sailed into Tripoli's harbor, you know, sort of like a very slow motion under sail cruise missile.
I see.
The intention being to destroy the Tripolitan fleet in the harbor, but it failed to do so as the shore batteries opened up and blew it up before it got in and caused the damage. No matter how much you want to use force projection, and in the 1800s that'd be sending in the big ships of the line in the 21st century, sending in the cruise missiles. Eventually, you're going to end up on the ground. And an American naval agent, William Eaton, will command a combined force of American Marines and friendly mercenaries to eventually capture the port city of Deme. There were only 8 Marines,
okay,
including one Lieutenant Presley O'Bannon, along with, depending on your source, somewhere between 100 to 500 Christian and Muslim mercenaries. After marching across land from Egypt, Eaton and the Americans will lead the group in an assault on the city on April 27, 1805, and take it. O'Bannon will raise the Stars and Stripes over the town, sort of a precursor of the Mount Suribachi moment for the Marine Corps. You can think of the Marine Corps monument Iwo Jima, right. The American force managed to hold the city against a counterattack on May the 13th and eventually will withdraw after a peace treaty is settled.
So the U.S. Navy and Marines capture the city of Deme, peace treaty settled, they sail back?
Well, not exactly. While favorable in terms, the U.S. paid $60,000 for the release of prisoners that had been taken when the USS Philadelphia ran aground earlier in the conflict. This led Eaton, when he was told to withdraw from Deme, to feel betrayed. The Barbary War is often the subject of debate over Jefferson's actions, with the rulers of the region eventually paying the ransom. Well, how is that any different than paying tribute? Wilson went to war to not pay tribute with the Barbary States. He will make the argument, in classic presidential sense, that it's different when it's ransom to gain release. I'm not paying tribute. The matter was not completely settled, though. Algerian ships, remember the Barbary States were more than one unit. Algerian ships will resume the attacks later, but the Americans were not able to respond because they were a little busy with the War of 1812. Mm-hmm. Once that's concluded at the Battle of New Orleans and other events in the peace treaty, then the United States will turn and respond with the Second Barbary War, and it will end any future payments when it concluded in 1816.
The Second Barbary War, that's something I didn't learn about in history class.
Well, you know, that's one of the interesting things of usually, as you say, history class, sort of typically taught as, well, you know, America has a scoreboard, and we had an 11-war season, generally, you know, toted up as 9-1-1.
Right.
We fought far more wars and conflicts than most, you know, a lot of military historians will use a number that actually reigns in the 250s.
Oh, my. So I guess it's like imagining a history student 150 years from now not knowing about Grenada.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
You know, is that a war? Well, right. You used your military, you took on a sovereign power.
And at the time, it was headlines.
Exactly.
But let's say Jefferson had gone to Congress and they said, absolutely not. We demand that you bring the Navy back. How physically could he have done that? I mean, if they're out to the water, do you send a faster, smaller boat to tell them to turn around? Any idea of how you can reverse that action?
Oh, I think that's exactly what Jefferson had calculated, is that if I have these ships of the line, which were fairly swift vessels for the day, so far out to sea that, number one, they can't be caught by a smaller messaging ship, but also, number two, finding them. It's not like you were going to tell the small ship, here's the GPS coordinates and the satellite tracking of the USS Enterprise. You know, you're not going to beam the Enterprise back at this time. We're not quite to that technology level.
Right. But until we do get to that technology level,
we're history.
Bill Smith earned his PhD in history at the University of Arkansas, and he teaches history at Northwest Arkansas Community College.
Are we alone in the universe? It's an age-old question. On the next Fresh Air, astrobiologist Mark Kaufman says we may be closer than ever to finding out if life exists on other planets. His new book is First Contact: Scientific Breakthroughs in the Hunt for Life Beyond Earth. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
Fresh Air, tonight, beginning at 6 on KUAF 91.3 FM. Ahead on Ozarks at Large, the Fayetteville Underground eyes a third year as an art gallery in downtown and plans for its first ever fundraising event later this month. A conversation with two members of the gallery's board of directors later. Now, a few items worth noting on this Monday. The petition seeking a referendum on a 1% prepared food tax in Fort Smith are being, at least temporarily, rejected by the Fort Smith City Clerk's Office. Petitions with more than 4,400 signatures were turned back because the clerk's office says no ballot title was submitted with the petitions and because the petitions did not include an attached full and correct copy of the ordinance sought to be referred. By law, the submitters have 10 days to correct any problems and turn in the petitions again. At least 2,282 valid signatures must be turned into the clerk's office to send the matter to Fort Smith voters. The petitioners seek the election in hopes of rejecting a 1% prepared food tax that was passed by the City Board of Directors this winter. That tax is to help fund operations for the City Convention Center. And unless rejected at the polls, the tax takes effect on June 1st. Labor leaders in four Arkansas cities are gathering this evening to call attention to labor issues. The Sebastian Crawford County's Labor Council will meet at 5:30 at the UA Local 29 Hall in Van Buren. The Northwest Arkansas Labor Council will gather at 5 at the corner of College Avenue and Dixon Street. Organizers picked April 4th to commemorate the work of Martin Luther King Jr.'s work with sanitation workers in Memphis so that they could have the right to collective bargaining. Dr. King was assassinated on this date in 1968 in Memphis. Labor groups are also holding rallies this evening in Little Rock and Texarkana. The University of Arkansas Fort Smith is offering scholarships to students in Japan affected by the recent earthquake and tsunami there. The chancellor at UA Fort Smith, Dr. Paul Barron, says the scholarships will allow students accepted by the school to continue their educations. Ray Wallace, the provost and senior vice chancellor at UA Fort Smith, says the offer continues already established relationships between the school and Japan. To be eligible, students must meet several requirements, including living in the federally declared disaster area in Japan and already be enrolled in a 2 or 4 year university there. The annual University of Arkansas Department of Music Honors Recital is tonight at 7. The performance at the Celeb Oil Smith Concert Hall in the Fine Arts Building is free and open to the public. The University of Arkansas Saxophone Chamber Orchestra will perform in the same venue tomorrow night. That concert, tomorrow night at 7:30, also free and open to the public. The series of free cooking classes sponsored by Appleseeds Incorporated and the Fayetteville School District continues tonight at Root Elementary School in Fayetteville. The class begins at 6. Participants do not need to have attended any of the previous classes or have an affiliation with the school district. For more information, appleseedinc.org. The University of Arkansas gymnastics team is headed back to the national finals after winning the NCAA North Regional in Denver Saturday night. The Razorbacks pulled off something of an upset, outscoring the nationally number one ranked Florida Gators at the meet. It was the second time this year Arkansas had defeated Florida. The Gators came in second at the regional this weekend, and they'll still qualify for the championship meet to be held in Cleveland April 15th, 16th, and 17th. In all, 12 teams from around the country qualified for the national championship meet. This is the fifth time in the 9-year history of the Arkansas program that the Razorbacks have advanced to the NCAA finals. And a native Arky with some serious musical roots and a fan base that spreads across the world will perform for free Wednesday night on the University of Arkansas campus. Joe Purdy has released 11 albums in the past decade, and his song Wash Away became synonymous with one of the seasons of the TV program Lost.
I got troubles, Lord, but not today. 'Cause they're gonna wash away, they're gonna wash away.
After Purdy played a show in Leeds, he was sought out by none other than Pete Townsend of The Who to play with Townsend as a special guest at a live show. Wednesday's concert will take place at RZ's Coffee House inside the Arkansas Union and begins at 7. This is Ozarks at Large.
Gonna wash away.
It is Monday, April 4th, 2011. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me is Becca Martin. She's the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
And it is, of course, the time of month when I say, it's April already?
Yes, it is.
How does this happen? Okay, tonight, 7 o'clock at the Stella Boyle Smith Concert Hall at the University of Arkansas, an honors recital featuring honor students from the music department.
Mm-hmm.
It's free. And plan ahead for tomorrow night, when Little Big Town plays the Washington Regional Foundation Gala.
They were just on Conan O'Brien the other night.
And apparently mentioned the fact they were coming to...
He did, before he, as he was introducing them, he said, and they'll be at Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville, Arkansas next week.
So, there you go. 7:30 on Tuesday, and tickets start at $45. You can read all about them at nwaonline.com/whatsup.
And that's the annual benefit for Washington Regional.
It is.
Becca Bacon-Martin is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers. This is Ozarks at Large. Later this week, a warm weather edition of First Thursday in Fayetteville is scheduled to take place about the downtown square. One of the building blocks of the First Thursday event, the Fayetteville Underground, will host a reception Thursday night for artists represented in the galleries this month. This is a noteworthy month for the Fayetteville Underground for at least a couple of reasons. It marks the second anniversary of the cooperative's endeavor, and on the 21st, the gallery will hold its first fundraising-specific event designed to help keep it financially viable. Last week, two of the board members of the Fayetteville Underground, Steve Ost and Greg Mack, sat down with Christopher Spencer and me to talk about the Fayetteville Underground and its future. The conversation is the latest collaboration between Ozarks at Large and the website OzarksUnbound.com, founded and produced by Christopher Spencer. Christopher asked Steve Ost if the spring and summer months will mean an increase in traffic to the Fayetteville Underground.
We find that our crowd has been pretty steady throughout the winter. We do obviously get an increase in people as the weather turns out nicer, and the connection with the First Thursday Fayetteville, the outdoor event. So we do get a large influx of people. So April is when the tides turn, so to speak, in that sense, when they start their event.
And as I recall, it began, and when I say it, I mean First Thursday Fayetteville, so to speak, began as a collaboration between Fayetteville Underground and the former DDP Gallery. And, of course, about a year ago or so, the city got involved, or the Visitors Bureau got involved. And what has that been like? Has that been a partnership for you guys? Or?
Sure. Our mission is to promote the arts, and so we see it as a positive thing. It's growing. We love it. We had a meeting yesterday with the Visitors Bureau, and I'm very excited about this year. I think we're going to have a lot of good things going on outdoors, and the more we have, the better it is for our town, which is part of our mission, is to grow the visual arts in Fayetteville.
Is there a challenge in getting people to visual arts? You can explain what happens in Death of a Salesman mm-hmm. or West Side Story, mm-hmm. and you can sometimes hear people say, well, I just don't get mm-hmm. I mean, does that represent sometimes a challenge, getting people in for the more
sure,
visual arts?
Sure, it is. I think that it's about, I mean, there's so much to that question. It really is. You know, I grew up in Washington, D.C., and my parents took me to downtown every year, every month. It seemed like we were going down there to see something. I mean, so it's an effort. You have to make an effort. You have to appreciate it. I think our town is one that does appreciate the arts, and so do make an effort. And I think that shows in the turnout that we get. Could it be greater? Yes. Will it grow? I believe so. But it is a challenge. Your point is well taken that, you know, a piece of abstract art, everybody doesn't necessarily get it. Or what I believe is they get something. They're just, it may not always be what was intended or you know, it's the same. So you and I may see something.
Well, that is, to me, the difference between arts and crafts is art stimulates thought and conversation. And it's not just about a reaction. But I know that one of the unique things about the Fayetteville Underground is the presence of the artists themselves. That's why the success of the First Thursday, the artist reception, the artists are there. And it's also what makes the Fayetteville Underground so unique in that they're studio artists there all the time. And there's working artist studios, and we encourage the public to come and visit those studios.
That's a good point. The prototype of the Fayetteville Underground is something called, what was in our mind when we started it, was a venture in Virginia, which is called the Torpedo Factory. And one of the things that they started that, philanthropists started that process, and then the city took it over. And it is a major economic driver for that town, which is directly across the river from the nation's capital. So you can imagine there's already a lot of people. But they saw it as a huge investment. And one of the things that I spent a lot of time talking with those people, and I grew up watching that business grow, but it's the mystery of the arts, which seeing the, you know, how is it done? You know, how do people make it? What, you know, because it is a mystery. So that's something that we see at the Fayetteville Underground. And I'm, you know, the studios are open for the most part, but, you know, it's just getting a glimpse of behind the curtain is intriguing for folks. So I think that helps bridge the gap of I don't understand it and becomes a little more interactive, back to your earlier question.
I am curious, though. I mean, I see people there. I see them talking about the art, and that is fantastic. Does that convert to purchases, the red dot, as they say? Mm-hmm. And is that a challenge? I mean, are you selling more? Because I've spoken privately to a few artists, and that's been a challenge for them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that the arts are challenged nationally right now. I mean, we can see that. I mean,
sure.
If
you see that in NPR,
but you can see that the, you know, the arts are challenged financially, whether it be philanthropic efforts, they're being cut back. People just don't have as much to give. People are tight, the economy is tight, so that does directly convert to what would be a discretionary spending. The Fayetteville Underground, and I know you and I talked about it earlier, has grown over 100% in the last year. So we are making sales. You know, I think our sales in last year were 80,000 range.
Well, and I was looking at the I guess all nonprofit organizations are required to file a 990, mm-hmm. which is a form that explains to the public and to the government, mm-hmm. you know, what is your revenue, what are your expenses, mm-hmm. and I'm looking at the 2009 one, and it's showing sales revenue of about $30,544, mm-hmm. and expenses of about $27,845. Mm-hmm. So that's about breaking even, mm-hmm. on the $30,000, mm-hmm. level. And you're, mm-hmm. saying this year, this, mm-hmm. is 2009, but you're talking about 2010. Mm-hmm. Sales were what?
80,000 plus. I think the you know, the file number will be 90,000 or something.
So it's more than double.
Mm-hmm. And we still are break even, but that's the point of the, we spend what we make on advertising and promoting and improving our location. But you know, it brings up a good point, you know, that you know, does it convert to sales? Sales are not our only vehicle for supporting ourselves. They will not. It will not.
You got some advertising promotions money.
We did, and we spent that money primarily on our 2010 gallery guide, which lays out all of our shows and kind of set the platform for future years. So that was very helpful for the organization. But it really relies on donations. We have got our 501c3 status in September of 2010, maybe it was September-ish, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. to be specific, of 2010, and we are just now launching our fundraising campaign. In fact, our first event is in April. We're having a reception, kind of our anniversary down at the Fayetteville Underground. Greg from Taylor Mac is leading he's a board member and leading our charge on the Friends of Fayetteville Underground. Just straight donations. People can go on our website and make donations. You know, we've relied really, our primary benefactor has been the building owners, Ted and Leslie Beldens and the Belden family. And, you know, you can't expect that to go on forever. So at some point, we have to raise operational funds. You know, right now it is 100% volunteer organization. The artists do the majority of the work. The board does the rest. And we have a few volunteers, but this is our year to really start growing. And so we're hoping that the community sees value in what we do. And we're hoping that they'll come out and support us with dollars in, whether that be buying a painting, which directly we get a percentage of those dollars, or direct contributions.
And what is the ratio breakdown between the Fayetteville Underground and the artist? I understood that, like, typically, I think it's, what, a 70-30 maybe?
It's kind of grown to a gallery will get 60 or 70% and charge a hanging fee.
I see.
That, like, if your stuff's in there, you're charged a fee as an artist, whether your stuff sells or not.
At the Fayetteville Underground, we have, it does vary slightly, but in general, we get 40% of the sale. So for every $100 that's sold, we get $40 that is a charitable donation. And that's really pays for advertising and promotion. As you can see from our filing, what we make goes to support the organization. There are no paid employees. Mm-hmm. No one gets any money. And so everything is volunteer. Everything is donation. So it's
Historically, the arts, the visual arts, is like it's been always been subsidized in some way, whether it was a patron. I mean, the Renaissance was subsidized by the Catholic Church.
Right.
If you want to look at it that one way,
Medici's, the Medici.
We're hoping that, like Steve said, the community will see the value of what we've got going and just be a friend or a member, just like you would be a member of the KUF. You know, just like nobody's out here to make any money. We just want to keep this environment, this creative, friendly environment for the artist, and just to see the value of it. And we think that if the community all steps up, that everybody just, chips in just a little bit. It'll just benefit everyone. It'll always be there for everybody.
Let me pull back and look at a bigger picture, because when you look at, starting with just Fayetteville, you have someone like Theater Square, which has had their most successful season ever, mm-hmm. and they've expanded. You look north, and Bentonville, it's not the same sort of thing exactly as First Thursday, but they have First Friday, where they have live music, and they have Sugar Gallery there, and in November, Crystal Bridges is opening.
Yep.
And as you pull out, it seems like it's sort of a double-edged sword, because you have, first, the rising tide lifts all boats. If you have interest in arts throughout Northwest Arkansas, that is good. But there are also challenges, and I think KUAF would be included in this, as you look at there are only so many dollars and people only have so much time. So is it friendly competition? I don't know if competition is the right word, but there are more ways for people to fill their free time.
Both. I think there are ways for people to fill their free time and take in different arts venues, as well as there are only so many dollars to go around. It's a conversation we've spent many hours talking about and discussing amongst the board and others, that, is there support or is there a depth of support, not necessarily support, because I know that there is support. People come out. That's support.
See a ton of people.
But is there a depth of
commitment.
Financial support? I can only ask Kyle to give so much. And, if you give to Theater Squared and you give to other not-for-profit organizations, when does it, do you take away from one to give us a little?
It is a
very complicated question, which I do not know the answer.
The economic value of it, it trickles down, just like schools and everything else, is companies can recruit people that for a better quality of life, and it directly plays into it. And there's an old saying that the people get the government they deserve. And I think it's the same way with the arts. You'll get the arts that you deserve. If you support it, you'll get it.
Greg Mack and Steve Ost are members of the Fayetteville Underground Board of Directors. They talked with Christopher Spencer from OzarksUnbound.com and me last week. The conversation is the latest installment of Unlicensed Opinion, the regular collaboration between Ozarks at Large and OzarksUnbound.com. Fayetteville Underground will host a reception for artists represented in the galleries this April on Thursday night, and a fundraiser for the Underground is scheduled for April 21st. You can hear more from the conversation online at OzarksAtLarge.com.
I'm Stephen Cook. Lefty Frizzell epitomizes the country music singer and is a hero to nearly all of them. The son of an oil field worker, he grew up in the oil towns of Smackover and El Dorado and had hits like Always Late With Your Kisses, Long Black Veil, and If You've Got the Money, I've Got the Time. It's Lefty Frizzell on this week's Arkin Songs.
Dance, drink, beer, and wine. If you got the money, honey, I've got the time.
Lefty Frizzell on the next edition of Arkin Songs tomorrow on Ozarks at Large. This is a Monday edition of Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. It's time for our question that might let you see the unique jazz show featuring John Pizzarelli and Kurt Elling at Walton Arts Center on Sunday evening at 7. The show is a combined effort of two highly acclaimed performers. It became a double bill after Kurt Elling's original date this winter was postponed by snow. Correct answers to today's question will be placed into the brand new replacement for the wooden chicken, the ceramic cow. As you may know, tonight, Butler University will play for the NCAA Men's Basketball Championship against the University of Connecticut. So our question today relates to a famous butler. There have been many famous fictional butlers: Jeeves, Lurch from the Addams Family, Angus Hudson from Upstairs Downstairs. But we turn to that incredible jack-of-all-trades, Alfred. Since the 1930s, he's been helping Bruce Wayne and Wayne's alter ego Batman fight crime and keep things in order at the Wayne Mansion. Today's question: what is Alfred's last name? Is it Pennyworth, Austin, or is his last name simply never been revealed? Again, what's the last name of Alfred, Batman's butler? Pennyworth, Austin, or has it never been revealed? Call 800-522-5823. That's 1-800-522-KUAF, and good luck. The answer to today's question, Batman's faithful and more than competent butler, is Alfred Pennyworth. Pennyworth, the correct answer. By the way, Butler University, the school playing in the NCAA men's basketball tournament tonight, was named after lawyer, journalist, and abolitionist Ovid Butler. Tomorrow, tune in again. We'll ask another question that will give you a chance to win a pair of tickets to David Sedaris' appearance at Walton Arts Center this month. That's tomorrow on Ozarks at Large. That's just about all the time for this Monday edition of Ozarks at Large. You're listening to KUAF Public Radio, 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Pettigrew. You can listen to KUAF online at KUAF.com. Ozarks at Large is supported by the Center for Arkansas and Regional Studies at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, dedicated to the celebration and documentation of the region's history and culture. Just a couple of more quick items. Congratulations to Stacy Lewis, former University of Arkansas golfer. She won the 40th annual Kraft Nabisco Championship at the Dinosaur Championship Course in Rancho Mirage, California yesterday, her first win on the LPGA Tour. And the University of Arkansas has a new supercomputer named Razor. It is, according to university officials, able to help researchers solve larger problems faster than ever. We'll have more about that later this week on Ozarks. And this music? Well, since we used Butler University as the inspiration for our trivia question today, it seemed only fitting to end the program with music from a UConn graduate, Moby. No favoritism here. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks for listening.